Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hey, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. Hope you had a wonderful holiday weekend and that it was a time to remember and give thanks and just enjoy the freedoms that we have that have come at a great price. So glad to have you listening in today. Mr. Thomas, do you have a fine weekend?
Oh, it was lovely. You got to be outside a tremendous amount and enjoyed that very much, God's creation, and also had the chance to reflect on the tremendous sacrifice of our servicemen and women, and was just, it was a meaningful holiday, I must say.
We did a little trip to visit mother-in-law, and also went to the cemetery where, you know, Grandpa's buried, and a number of family members, and seen all the flags, and just, so it was nice. But, you know, don't spend enough time sometimes in cemeteries, just considering, all the legacy that's exhibited there. Mm-hmm. Also spent some time driving around the main streets of several small towns in northwest Iowa, which
yes,
I would say probably the three of them combined, possibly maybe 1,000 people between the three of them.
Oh, that is one of the best places in the world, northwest Iowa. I love it there.
You had not a lot of population hanging out in the towns, but anyway. All right, we're going to talk. We're going to talk investing, and we could talk about sound mind, but that's a whole nother show.
Not our expertise.
No. Thankfully, it is for Mark Biller, though. Mark is executive editor of Sound Mind Investing. His writings on a broad range of financial topics have been featured in a variety of national print and electronic media. And he also appears as a financial commentary for various national and local radio programs, which we hear regularly. He is on, I think, fairly consistently on the Money Wise with Howard and Steve each afternoon at 2:30. And we're honored to have him on our program back again. We've had Mark on from time to time and thought we'd spend some time talking investments and fears in the marketplace and all those things. So if you have some questions today, I encourage you to give us a call. We'll open up the phone lines right away. Talking, 401ks or, you know, the state of the economy and how to kind of plan for your retirement years, or maybe if you are retired, then how do you keep the investment growing? It's 877-93-FAITH. That's our phone number, 877-933-2484. And with that, let's welcome in Mark. Mark, good to have you back to Connecting Faith.
Thanks, guys. It's good to be with you again.
We always enjoy our conversation and feel like I learn a lot. And I guess one of the things that I wanted to focus on a little bit today is there seems to be, I guess we've always known that fear seems to sell, you know, that there's a lot of talk about, well, you know, collapse just around the corner, or there's, you know, there's been doom and gloom cycles for some time. But is fear in the market warranted today? Or why does that seem like we're hearing a lot more about that?
Well, there definitely has been a bull market in fear over the last 5 years. Coming out of the financial crisis in 2008 and early 2009, there were a lot of unprecedented actions that were taken by the government, by the Federal Reserve. And because there really was no precedent for these things happening before, it made it very difficult to have a real logical debate about, well, what will be the outcome of these actions that are taken. And because there was no precedent, you couldn't look back and say, well, when we did this 30 years ago, this is what happened. There wasn't any of that. So there was a real void. There was kind of an opening there for there to be a lot of speculation about what might occur as a result of these actions that were taken. In a lot of cases, you could point to, or someone could point to, a particular aspect of an action that was taken. Say the growing of the money supply was a popular one. You know, everybody got at least 6 or 7 emails with the chart with the money supply curve going way up off the end of the chart. And, you know, that's scary. You see that, and that's scary. And again, there was no precedent for that to say what happens when that type of money growth occurs at a time when the banks aren't lending, because that had never happened before. Whenever we'd seen that type or anywhere near that type of growth in the money supply before, it led to high inflation, because under normal conditions, growth in the money supply does lead to inflationary pressures. So that's just one tiny example of where someone could look at part of the data, part of what was going on, and kind of project that out into the future. But there were other variables that were different. And of course, in hindsight, there was no hyperinflation. We're 5 or 6 years down the road. We've had very, very low measured inflation, at least. And that's not to say we couldn't still see some of those effects, but it's just one real clear example, because that's one place where a lot of people were really concerned that a certain cause was definitely going to cause this other effect, where in fact it didn't pan out that way. It just didn't turn out the way people thought it would. And unfortunately, like you mentioned, Neil, in introing this, you know, fear sells. And so a lot of people in the financial business, it is a selling business to some degree. A lot of people were selling books, were selling newsletters, were selling investment advice under really a fear mantle, if you will. By getting people afraid, you can sell them certain types of investments or investment products, because people respond very, very quickly to fear, actually more strongly than they do to optimism and gains and so forth.
You know, you mentioned, you know, under normal conditions. I mean, are we at a point where normal conditions, there's a new normal? I mean, do we know what normal is anymore?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that anybody would be premature in saying, yeah, everything's back to normal, you know, as you were, nothing to see here. You know, I think that's probably a little bit too optimistic. At the same time, I do think that we have to recognize, you know, it's been 6 years now since Lehman Brothers went under. The investment bank went bankrupt, which is kind of what was the catalyst, the kickoff of the whole financial crisis cycle. Not to say that's what caused it, but that's what kind of, if you're waving the flag to start the race on the financial crisis, that would be the point most people would say, okay, that's when it really got underway. So we've had a really extended period of time here now. I think that by most indications, the economic picture is stabilizing. Obviously, it's not where anybody wants it to be. We've had 6 years of pretty mediocre fits and starts kind of recovery for the economy, and that's a long time to go without a good, solid recovery. So it's not like I'm saying things are great out there, but I do think we're pretty far down the road from the acute crisis point, and yet we're still, for a lot of people, they're still kind of hanging on to those fears that were birthed in the acute crisis that was going on. And I think for a lot of people, they've never really kind of let go of some of those fears to say that some of these worst case scenario outcomes probably are not right around the corner, like they seemed like they legitimately could be when we were going through the depths of that darkest period.
Is there a legitimate concern, though, to say that maybe some of the problems of 08 still are in place, or that we haven't corrected them?
Yeah, I think that there is. I think that is fair to say. And I do think that we will continue to probably have you know, rounds of continuing to adjust to the current financial climate, if you will, dealing with these massive financial institutions, the too big to fail banks, the regulation, how do we get a handle on those? You know, these are all issues that continue to be out there. They continue to present risk to the system. So again, I'm not at all saying that, hey, clear skies, sunny sailing, but I think that it's important for people to balance the risks that are out there, because there always are risks. You know, if we were to step back, Neil, you know, let's start in the 1930s. You know, what were the risks in the 1930s? Well, we had some pretty big ones overseas with dictators who wanted to take over the world. So that was a pretty bad start. We get through the 40s there. We get into the 50s. There were some pretty big risks at that point, too, namely a Cold War against an adversary that we were locked, you know, head to head in this struggle for the world. You know, you get into the 60s, you've got another set of issues. You've obviously got another significant overseas war that we're involved in. The 70s, you've got risks. You've got runaway inflation coming along, real inflation, not the kind that we've been worried about for the last 5 or 6 years with interest rates. You know, you want to buy a house? Sure, we'll give you a 15 to 20% home mortgage. You know, at every point, there are always significant risks on the horizon, not to diminish what we face today, but risk is a part of the investment experience. And that's why the whole prediction model of investing is, in our opinion, a flawed way to go about it. Because trying to predict what the future is going to hold is a fool's errand. Nobody can do it consistently. The investment business is a history of pumping up one guy who's made a good prediction or a couple of good predictions, only to have him fall flat on his face in the next cycle. And then we go find a new guy to pump up who's made the last call correctly. So we make him the hero and hear what he has to say about what's going to happen until he falls flat on his face. Nobody can consistently predict what's going to happen next. That's why we fall back on the biblical wisdom for investing, which says in Ecclesiastes 11:2, divide your portion to 7 or 8 because you don't know what misfortune is going to come on the earth. That's why we build a diversified portfolio. We don't run away from the market and say, no, too risky. We recognize what risks are there. We try to diversify so that we're protected against these certain risks, without going totally overboard on any one particular threat. For example, coming out of the financial crisis, you had a lot of investors who said, economy is going to crash, stock market's going to zero, I'm going to pile into gold. You know, if we have inflation, gold will do well, the market's going to crash, all that. Well, that worked until it didn't. And now, you know, gold since 2011, which is a year or two after everybody was piling into it, is down almost 40%. So a more prudent approach, we would say, is stop trying to predict exactly how this is going to play out. And let's look at diversifying your portfolio. Let's put some gold in there to protect you against inflation, against a falling dollar, against the different things that gold does well. But maybe we limit that to 5 to 10% of your portfolio, and we take this other chunk of your portfolio and we keep it in stocks in case these predictions about the collapse are wrong. Well, that would have worked out well because stocks are up, you know, 150 to 180% since the lows of 2009. So it's all about trying to balance these risks, not ignore them, not say they don't exist, but reacting appropriately, responding appropriately to these risks to build a diversified portfolio that can keep growing. You always have to ask yourself with any investment program, what if I'm wrong and X, fill in the blank, doesn't happen? And that's particularly true if you're basing it on any kind of prediction, any kind of forward-looking forecast, which is how most people go about their investing. It's the opposite approach of what we do. We don't make predictions, believe it or not. We don't set our portfolios based on what we think is going to happen next. Instead, we try to build a diversified portfolio, and actually we use trend following systems. We follow where the market is already going. to give us cues on making adjustments to the investments that we hold.
They call it sound mind investing. It sounds pretty wise. And that Mark Biller is executive editor of Sound Mind Investing. It is a they have a weekly or a is it a monthly newsletter or weekly?
Monthly newsletter.
Monthly newsletter. Yeah. At soundmindinvesting.com. I encourage you to check that out. Also, there's a subscriber service things. There's also some, free material there as well. And we've got some free financial advice with Mark here today. And I would encourage you to join with us. If you have a question, we're going to talk a little bit more about, as we live longer and have longer retirements, how do we make those investments last longer, get into some 401k discussions, maybe even home mortgages, or maybe it's about planning for your kids' education fund, all those things. If you have some questions, join the conversation right now at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. More with Mark Biller in a moment.
On Wednesday's Faith Radio Mornings, we'll hear the inspiring testimony of Tasha Hsu. Tasha was in a theater accident in 1997 and was paralyzed from the chest down. We'll hear how faith played the key role in her rehabilitation.
And at 7:40, we'll talk about how children suffer so much when they're in a home with domestic violence. Jody Cowden from The Dwelling Place will talk about A Kid's Guide to Domestic Abuse and how this interactive book will help kids understand their own situations.
Join us on Wednesday at 6 a.m. for Faith Radio Mornings.
That feeling comes with a phone call you didn't expect.
That feeling as the news sinks in.
About the surprise diagnosis or the financial curveball. And in that moment, it's hard not to feel alone.
To wonder how you're going to deal with it all.
Be encouraged today. You don't have to go through it alone.
There's a whole community of friends ready to encourage you and pray for your situation. It's called PrayerWorks.
An online, completely anonymous source of inspiration and hope.
Find PrayerWorks at myfaithradio.com.
Well, it's 21 past the hour, and we're talking about investing today and how so much is driven by fear today. And we've been getting some great perspective about not using the prediction model, but looking at biblical wisdom. We're talking with Mark Biller, executive editor of Sound Mind Investing. They have a weekly email newsletter for members. They have great resources online. They've published the Sound Mind Investing Handbook back it's a dozen years ago or so, and Mark's a regular guest on Money Wise with Howard and Steve each afternoon on Faith Radio, and we're happy to have him on with us today. And as that song, a little bumper song, reminds us, whom shall I fear? That's the question that seems to fill our minds so much. Mark, I was interested in just as we talk, and by the way, our phone number is 877-933-2484, and we'd be happy to have you on with a question about your portfolio, some questions. So one of my questions, people are living longer, have longer retirements. In fact, sometimes they're maybe retired almost as long as they were in the workforce. So how should that change our investment strategy once we do retire? Or has it have people changed the way they're approaching it now?
Yeah, I think that you've had, especially in the last 5 years, just amplifying the change that was necessary because of these extended retirements. You've also had a second factor, Neil, which is interest rates being pushed down to just about nothing, has really turned the whole old model of retirement investing kind of on its head. It used to be you would take more risks while you were working and own stocks and try to build up the portfolio, and then you kind of had, ideally at least, I think a lot of people had in mind, hey, I'm just going to, buy bonds, live off the interest, and that's kind of my retirement portfolio, maybe some dividend-paying stocks, live off the dividends, that kind of thing. Well, when interest rates are as low as they are now, even if you've saved a lot, your portfolio isn't going to produce a whole lot of income, and then you add in the factor that you're talking about, which is, if I'm retiring at 65, you know, am I looking at a 20, 30 year retirement period? I need to keep that money growing to some degree just to keep even with inflation. You've got really a kind of a conundrum for retirees. How do I do this? How do I keep the money growing? And how do I get income when bonds really aren't paying much anymore? And that is a really difficult issue. I think that at the most, you know, the most fundamental level, you have to readjust the expectations for what a retirement portfolio looks like. Unfortunately, that means that probably a little bit higher degree of volatility is going to be required by keeping more money in stocks longer. The idea of ramping down your stock exposure dramatically in the years leading up to retirement, you really can't take that too far because you do have to keep that money growing. In most cases, you have to plan on it growing for decades in retirement. So that doesn't mean that you keep, you know, just as much risk as you've had during your working career. You still do want to throttle that down, but you can't take it as far as retirees maybe a generation ago would have, where they were almost completely out of stocks in many cases by the time they got to retirement. So, for example, in our newsletter for our readers, you know, when we are kind of presenting them with a glide path of moving out of stocks and into bonds as they get towards retirement age, we don't even really suggest that they begin moving out of stocks and into bonds until they get to be 10 to 15 years away from retirement. We've got them mostly stock all that time up until then. And even when somebody's hitting their early retirement years, you know, we're still talking with our folks about maintaining maybe a 50-50 type portfolio as they're hitting their retirement years. And that's higher than a lot of people, you know, are maybe comfortable with or would certainly, you know, suspect is what they ought to be doing as they get to retirement.
Yeah. Taking it out and putting it in the pillow, in the mattress, not really, not the best advice any longer, apparently, is it?
Well, it really isn't. And, you know, the problem is when the Fed's trying to keep inflation at, you know, a minimum of maybe 2% and your bonds are only yielding 3 or 4%, you know, you're barely keeping up with inflation, and that's if you're not taking the money out to live on. So you've got to supplement that with something that's going to grow a little bit at the same time.
Let's take a call from Sandy. This is a good question that we probably all wonder about. It has to do with reading our mail. Sandy, go ahead. You're on with Mark Biller.
Hi. Our retirement fund is being moved to Fidelity, and they sent me all of these, the stack of summary prospectus and for different funds. How do I read these to compare what am I don't even quite know what I'm looking for when I'm reading through all these prospectus.
Okay.
And, Mark, we got a break coming up here in about a minute, so we maybe won't have a chance to fully develop it. In fact, maybe we'll just hold off and we'll answer it after the break. But I think that's one of those questions we, you know, if we have any investment accounts at all, we're getting these all the time, and they make good recycling, but should we be, I guess the question is, should we be looking for them? What should we be looking for? And particularly if Sandy says, if we've changed from one vendor to another, then, what should we be looking for? So we'll get to that questions and more. And we'd like to have you join the conversation. You have a question as we talk about investments today. Maybe it has to do with, retirement vehicles or college plans or, you know, savings, investment in general. 401ks, 877-93-FAITH is our phone number. It's 877-933-2484. Or if it's more convenient, you want to drop us a note, you can do that online by going to our website, myfaithradio.com, and click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link there. You can send us your question, myfaithradio.com, and go to Connecting Faith. So we'll get to Sandy's question about how do we read these prospectus that fill our mailboxes. We'll get to that and more with Mark Biller, executive editor of Sound Mind Investing. You can find out more about their resources online, soundmindinvesting.com. More with Mark coming up in a couple minutes. Glad to have you tuned in today to Connecting Faith. Always glad to connect with Mark Biller as we talk a little bit about investing and finances and just understanding some biblical principles for investment. Mark is executive editor of Sound Mind Investing, and they provide a great deal of writing, including a regular monthly newsletter. They've also written the Sound Mind Investing Handbook, and that's sold thousands of copies since they came out here in 92, I think, or so. And Mark is on regularly with Howard and Steve on MoneyWise, so you can always catch him there, and I hope that you do. We had a call from Sandy just a minute ago, Mark, and she's asking about, you know, how to understand all the prospectus that come her way. Any advice on how we should read those, if we should at all?
Yeah, the problem really with the fund prospectuses is that, for the most part, those are written by lawyers for lawyers, so it's very easy to kind of get lost in the weeds as you start reading those. But the most important thing, Sandy, to look for as you're trying to determine which funds to invest your money in within your plan is to look at the objective of each fund. And right up front in the fund summary, there should be some language that tells you, what does this fund invest in specifically? Is it foreign and international stocks? Is it small company stocks, large company stocks, bonds? And if so, what type of bonds? Are they short-term? Are they long-term? And that information will usually be in a section either labeled objective, or there may be a sentence or two that gives you a summary of what that fund is all about. And that is really the most crucial information there. Now, as far as how do you put that together into a decent little portfolio, that's where a service like ours at Sound Mind Investing, if you were to go to soundmindinvesting.com, we would be able to help you a lot in seeing very quickly, how do I combine these different pieces? You know, I think that a lot of people, if they have good fund choices in their 401k, can really cover a lot of the bases with just a handful of funds. If you've got a good international stock fund, a good small company stock fund, a good large company stock fund, that's probably all you need on the stock side. Couple that with a good bond fund, preferably one that's labeled short-term bonds or maybe intermediate-term bonds. I really wouldn't want to be exposed to long-term bonds at this point with interest rates where they are. But if you put a good bond portfolio or a good bond fund in that portfolio with those three stock funds, you'd be a good chunk of the way, you know, towards where you need to be. And in fact, we have a strategy that we call just the basics. It's just what it sounds. It's as easy as it comes. Four funds, you can do it. Most people can do it in their 401k. You might just look at our website for a little more information on just the basics. And while you're there, if you're curious, you can obviously look at our other strategies and things. But that's a super simple one that anybody can implement, whether you know much about investing or not. You know, that's kind of the point of that just the basics portfolio, is it can help you even if you don't know very much. So check that out at soundmindinvesting.com, and hopefully you won't have to read too far into all of those prospectuses.
And remember to recycle. I think that's the main thing. Anyway, I do want to come back and kind of follow up on that, looking at the objective as it relates to socially conscious funds. But I want to take Barb's question first. She's been waiting for a little while, and she has a question about some predicting the capital we'll need. Barb, go ahead. You're on with Mark Biller.
Yes, my husband just is in the process of starting to retire. He turned 70, and he's cutting back on his work hours. And we have 401ks. Of course, I've been taking a distribution from mine because I'm older than he is. But he's maxed his out, and we have quite a bit of in 401ks and in savings, and trying to anticipate our needs for capital and how to smartly diversify if we need to. We have probably more than 50% in stock, no debt. So if you could kind of give a little guideline, it would be helpful.
Sure. Well, sounds, Barb, like you've been taking the right steps. Maxing out the 401k is really a great way for most people to build that retirement savings. And then the transition, when you're ready to start taking money out, that is the tricky piece. And really, Barb, it starts with getting a very clear view of your expenses in retirement. The best way to do that is to look at what you've been spending and get a very clear view of what your budgeted expenses look like. It's not a great lightning bolt kind of an answer. It's kind of down in the gritty detail, but that really is the most important step for most people as they're trying to figure out how much of their investments to draw down in retirement. So you got to match up those expenses. So once you've got a good picture of that budgeted need, then you can start to see, one, if it's going to match up with your investment accounts. Do you have enough there to be able to withdraw what you're going to need to meet those expenses? And if not, to make adjustments, either on the investment side or more likely on the expenses side. As far as the amount in stocks, you mentioned that you've got 50% or a little more in stocks right now. That's, as we were talking about earlier, that's not necessarily inappropriate. Some people are hearing that and going, wow, that seems high. But these days, you do need to have a decent slug still in there in the stock market. Now, could that start drifting down? Yeah, it probably could and probably should in the years to come. Especially if you have enough saved, when you go through that exercise of looking at your budget, if you say, we're in good shape, we've got enough here, then it's a situation where you don't want to take on more risk than is necessary to maintain that standard of living that you've got laid out in your budget. But there are some ways that you can still keep money exposed to stocks while still reducing the risk of that. We don't have a lot of time to get into detail on that, but that's an area where we have an approach we call dynamic asset allocation, that if you're interested in something like that, you could look at that on our site at soundmindinvesting.com and just search for dynamic asset allocation. And that's a way to be in the stock market, but we're watching mechanical signals. Again, no predictions. It's not Austin's or my view of when stocks are going to turn down. We're looking at mechanical signals that indicate to us it's time to move some money away from stocks and into a different asset class. And that approach has been a much more palatable way for risk-averse people to still keep their money exposed to the stock market, but knowing that there's kind of a ripcord there that's going to get them out and get them away from stocks when certain mechanical signals start to fire in the market. So that might be something to look at. Many of our readers who are in the nearing retirement or early retirement age really have responded very, very positively to that particular approach, that dynamic asset allocation.
Austin, it brings up the question. You talk about having a clear view of expenses. You're talking to Barb regarding her predicting the capital needs. It seems like we hear it all the time. Well, what about if our big expense still is the mortgage? We're approaching retirement, or we still have it. Should we just pull out from our 401k to take care of that mortgage? Good idea, bad idea?
Well, it's, in my opinion, it's definitely a bad idea prior to age 59 and a half. If you are younger than that age and you're taking money out of your 401k, you are going to pay a 10% penalty as well as taxes on the money. So, the way I would look at that is if you ever got in a position where you really were not going to be able to keep making the mortgage payments, at that time you could take the money out of the 401k, pay the penalties, pay the taxes, and make the payment. But if you're not in a position where you cannot otherwise pay your mortgage except to make that withdrawal from your 401k, it's an extremely inefficient way to use your resources, because you're in essence giving away 10% of the money that you've saved just for the privilege of making that early mortgage payment. It just is not a real prudent way to use those resources, in my view, especially given that, again, if you don't do it now, the asset still is there if you really do need it. If you get into a real bind later on, you've got it there. So why do it early if you don't really need to? Now, as you get more into your 60s or 70s, a retirement age where you can get the money out without paying that penalty, the equation does change a little bit. There, I would just say, if you've got a reasonable mortgage, meaning one that you've either taken out or refinanced in the last several years, you're probably paying a rock-bottom interest rate, 3%, 4%, something like that. So, again, unless it's kind of a crisis situation where you just don't have the money from anywhere else to pay the mortgage, you know, if that's the case, then sure, take it from the retirement plan and pay it. But if not, I would tend to look at that like continue to pay the mortgage at the low interest rate, continue to invest wisely, hopefully, in the retirement account, and continue to get the tax advantages over there, and only raid the retirement account if you absolutely need it to pay the mortgage.
Good advice. That we call it sound mind advice, or sound mind investing is the organization we're talking about. Mark Biller is executive editor of the ministry. You can sign up for their monthly newsletter. You can see all the resources they have online at soundmindinvesting.com. They've also done the Sound Mind Investing Handbook. That's been out for a number of years and been very helpful. And Mark is here to answer our questions. We're going to get to socially conscious funds, investments, and those things coming up here in just a moment. And we still have room for you if you have a question. Something that you've heard today has maybe sparked a conversation, something you'd like to discuss with us, you can join us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. More with Mark Biller in a minute.
Faith Radio is great news that lasts.
He's not just the God, the Lord Almighty, he's the God of Jacob. Did you ever wonder why that's in here? Do you remember who Jacob was of the three patriarchs? He's the not very good one. Jacob's the guy that was always messing with people, lying to people, manipulating. But you know what? It's a message of grace. He's saying, I'm the God of Jacob. I show up for manipulators and schemers. When you're a Jacob, God says, I'll show up for you.
Real truth, real hope, Faith Radio.
My, how they've grown, and it has nothing to do with height. When your kids spend a week at University of Northwestern St. Paul Athletic Camp, their physical athletic skills will grow, but they'll also grow spiritually and emotionally. They'll learn from winning Christian coaches about technique, discipline, and team building, skills that won't just help them in their favorite sport, but also in life. Camps are offered for boys and girls and include basketball, baseball, football, volleyball, and soccer. To register, visit unweagles.com/camps.
Forty-five past the hour, talking with Mark Biller today, is executive editor of Sound Mind Investing. It got underway years ago, back when Austin Pryor, having lunch with longtime friend Larry Burkett, and they were talking about the financial challenges facing the average Christian family. And Larry commented that a monthly newsletter was needed. He thought some kind of a consumer report for Christians in the area of finances. And that's kind of how it began way back in, I think, 1990 or so. And Mark has been leading the organization for a number of years and writes regularly. You can get details on their website at soundmindinvesting.com. And, Mark, we had a caller who wants to know about your thoughts on the socially conscious funds. So you mentioned, you know, just the basics. You know, if you got international funds, small cap, large cap, some bond funds. I mean, how do we go from there? And is socially conscious something that we should be pursuing if we could?
Yeah, it's a great question, and especially in the context of available options within a typical 401k plan, it's very important to recognize that the terminology of these funds is very important. There's a very broad umbrella of socially responsible investing. And within that umbrella, you're going to have everything from funds that are essentially set up to favor values that are pretty far distant from probably the typical listener of your show, Neil, all the way to, you know, more Christian value-based investing, where the things they're screening out and promoting would be very comfortable for the typical listener of your show. So you've got a pretty broad tent here, which means that that is one area where if you had an offering, say, in your 401k fund that's labeled socially conscious or socially responsible, something along those lines, that would be a time when it would be pretty important to dig in and do your homework and see exactly what does that mean to that particular fund manager, because you may be surprised that it's screening out things that you actually would support, and maybe, you know, just basically taking the opposite spin on how you think you would want to invest in a socially responsible manner. Now, that said, there are some very good biblical values type funds out there. The Timothy Plan was one of the early ones. They just celebrated their 20th anniversary, so they've been around for quite a while, have a track record you can look at. So there are some very good Christian screened funds out there. I would just caution people that every time you see that type of terminology does not mean you can assume that the values that they're screening for and promoting are your values, because you just have the whole range out there. Just like the political process, you've got the whole range of values in these funds.
Mark, does the Bible expect us to be socially responsible, or should we just be shrewd investors? I mean, as you look at, you know, maybe Jesus' teaching on money and investing in reading the Gospels, what are the main points you think that you draw out of that?
Well, you know, that is an issue that certainly the people who are in that biblical values investing area, of course, they're going to feel very strongly, and they're going to have a little bit different answer than I do. And, you know, I respect those guys. I have good relationships with a lot of those people. Sound Mind Investing, our company, has not focused on the screening and on the values-based investing side of it, primarily because we feel that for the average individual, investing is a pretty difficult subject to get their arms around. It's pretty difficult for them to implement, and we feel that the best way for them to do that in a practical way is to use mutual funds. When you use mutual funds, you have a lot less control over what that manager may own, because even if they don't own anything that's objectionable to you when you buy the fund, they can make changes at any time. So we have not emphasized that aspect. We also kind of feel like, you know, it, to some degree, it is similar to the idea that we would all like to breathe clean air. I think everyone would agree with that. Yes, I want to breathe clean air. That doesn't mean that I walk around with a gas mask on all the time. So we kind of feel like incidental contact with a particular stock that we might not buy directly ourselves, if it passes through our mutual fund portfolio, That is not something that we feel like is unacceptable. Again, I know that sounds maybe a little odd to some people, but you have to also consider it's kind of like when you buy a used car. If Neil, if I buy your used Toyota, when I buy that car, my money does not go to Toyota, it goes to you. Yeah. And the same is true in the stock market. If you buy my shares of Toyota, that money doesn't go to Toyota. That money goes to me, the seller of the stock, to you. So it's not that we're ambivalent to it. We just feel like there are more effective ways to make our voice heard to companies that are acting in ways that are not in accordance with our values. We don't really feel like the investing side accomplishes a whole lot in that regard, and we think that it does greatly complicate the mission for the average person trying to invest. So it's not something that we have emphasized.
Okay. By the way, I'm kind of, you know, in the mood to trade cars, so I think I've got a deal in my Toyota, and hang on after the show because we can talk. So just washed it this weekend. Of course, it rained, but it's looking good. Anyway, that's a whole side show, Mark. We're gonna try and get to a couple of more callers here. These have just left some questions here.
Sure.
Another caller says, "What are Mark's thoughts on management fees? The fees on my accounts are 2.25%, and they seem a bit high."
Yeah, I think that 2.25% probably is a bit high, especially, you know, considering you have to consider what is that manager doing for you. Is that the expense ratio of a mutual fund? Is that what an advisor is charging? And if so, what are they giving you for that 2.25%? You know, that's pretty steep. Typically, most advisors are usually in the 1% kind of range if you're working with an advisor. So, yeah, I would definitely evaluate that and see, does that make sense? Now, if that's the total cost to implement a fairly unique strategy for you, and that strategy, you know, has a great track record and it meets your goals specifically, you know, I'm not saying you would necessarily abandon it, but that's the kind of number that would make you definitely look twice and make sure you're getting good value.
Okay. Another caller wants to know, says, how do you save money for home improvement? They say, should I use bond laddering? And the second part is Vanguard, a safe company.
Yeah, great question. We actually have an article in our June issue that just hit our website last Friday that is all about how to save for things you're not going to draw on for at least 2 years or more. And the idea of kind of breaking up your emergency savings, which you want to have very safe, very liquid, very little risk, and separating that from like an accumulation fund, like this home repair kind of idea where you might not draw on it for a while. And in that article, we talk about choosing a good short-term bond fund and make some comparisons there. And actually, the second part of that caller's question about Vanguard, the fund that we actually kind of hone in on that article is the Vanguard short-term investment grade bond fund as a good option. Vanguard is a great fund company. They have very low fees. They do indexing very well, which is a particular form of investing where you're not trying to beat the market. You're just trying to match a certain part of the market's return. So yes, I would be very comfortable with Vanguard, and I think that a short-term bond fund would be an appropriate choice if you're not going to need that money for probably 2 years or so.
Because obviously there's some limits, contractual limits, right? 6 months or 12 months or something on that.
Yeah, right? Well, in this case, if you're using one of their mutual funds, you can actually get your money at any time.
Okay.
So there are no limits from that standpoint. But when you go into short-term bonds, you can have losses, small losses, over shorter time periods. So you would be reluctant to use a vehicle like that for your emergency fund where you might need to take that out at any moment This is more for money you think will be in there for at least a couple of years to kind of buffer any of those short-term, you know, hits.
We've been talking mostly about investing, but you mentioned saving. Do you have a rule of thumb in terms of how much we should be saving, or how we kind of the ways in which we save?
Yeah, I mean, the old saw, the 3 to 6 months of living expenses that most advisors will recommend really is a good starting point. And really, the more uncertain your work situation, the more you really need to be striving for the longer end of that curve. And it's a lot. You know, some people hear that 3 to 6 months, I'll never get there. Well, just, you know, start doing what you can. You know, $1,000 in savings is better than nothing in savings. And then from there, you just take that next step and start working on the next 1,000. And eventually, you start creeping up on the 3 month goal. And, you know, if you stick to it, you will get there. So don't be discouraged when you hear somebody like me throw that out as a long term goal. The key is to get started, you know, make progress. Make progress this month. Make progress this year. And, you know, I think that really as you're faithful in trying to implement these principles and you're praying and asking the Lord how to go about it, I believe that He rewards faithfulness and that as you make those efforts that He will help you as you pursue those biblical principles from a good motive.
Good words, as always, from Mark Biller. We didn't have a chance to talk about Ryan's balanced portfolio because he seems a little off balance to me. But this will be a whole other show. And then, you know, we got the car talk to do right after this interview. The website's just been updated, I think, too. Hasn't it? SoundMindInvesting.com? Isn't it new?
Well, we've got our new issue up there.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yep. So check that out. SoundMindInvesting.com. Always great insight. You can catch Mark regularly on MoneyWise as well each afternoon at 2:30 here in Faith Radio. Mark Biller is executive editor of Sound Mind Investing, and I always appreciate having you on, Mark. Good to talk with you again today.
Thanks, Neil. My pleasure.
All right. That's today's program. If you missed part of it, maybe you want to catch it, you can listen to the podcast or pass it on to a friend. Go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page for the podcast there, and we'll see you tomorrow on the next installment.